Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii is now reconvened.
Please call the case.
Case number SCWC-13-4085, State v. Quidde. Arguing for the petitioner, Stephen K. Tsushima. Arguing for the respondent, Susan L. Arnett.
All right.
Argument on the merits.
Good morning, Mr. Tsushima and Ms. Arnett. You're both ready to proceed today?
Yes.
All right. And we'll give you a warning with 10 minutes to go in your argument, Mr. Tsushima, and a five-minute warning for you, Ms. Arnett. And the court does have the visual aid, which is, we gather, is from the record in the case in front of us, and there was no objection from Mr. Tsushima, so we have that. So please proceed.
For the record, may it please the court, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney Stephen Tsushima, on behalf of the State of Hawaii. Good morning, Chief Justice.
Good morning.
And Associate Justice, good morning to you as well. In this case, petitioner of the state submits the ICA majority erred in interpreting Article 1, Section 7 of the Hawaii Constitution to protect an individual from targeted aerial surveillance of the individual's residence and its curtilage. Secondarily, the ICA majority also erred in holding that a relevant factor discussed in both Statchler and Knight was the targeted nature of the aerial surveillance. Thirdly, the ICA majority erred in holding whether the observed premises is urban or rural is relevant to the constitutionality of aerial surveillance. I'd actually ask the court if the court has any concerns about this to ask questions, because in particular, I guess in layman's terms, the main problem that we had with ICA's decision was just targeted nature, or the targeted aspect that it used in its determination that the aerial surveillance was improper, as that was never a discussed factor in either Statchler or Knight. And because it based primarily its decision apparently on that factor, which we believe, if anything, would cut in favor of the state, that it would be desired that a police aerial surveillance be targeted as opposed to not, because it would be a waste of resources otherwise to be just generally surveying area when there's a specific residents in question that they need to be surveying.
Mr. Tsushima, suppose the HPD decides, or DEA decides, to have drones that just regularly fly above and go back and forth across the island. Would that be? Then we wouldn't have to worry about a waste of resources necessarily. I don't know how much drones cost, but it would be a lot less than a So how does your waste of resources argument figure into that scenario?
Well, the waste of resources argument wouldn't factor in, but I think that would be problematic for the reasons Statchler and Knight had mentioned regarding a prolonged or otherwise harassing type of surveillance. And I think that would be problematic if HPD started using that as their source of surveillance. As I understand it, they aren't using drones.
So what's the distinction between drones, as Justice Nakayama asked you, and this case?
Well, in particular, I would also see drones as a highly sophisticated visual device, and that's specifically what Statchler had said is not allowable. In reading the cases that deal with the aerial surveillance of...
We've had drones since the Civil War, the American Civil War, they used them. Things similar. So maybe I'm not understanding the difference between the why technology of a drone would be more sophisticated than a helicopter.
Statchler and Knight seem to be concerned with the visual use of highly technical devices, so that what it appeared to be, I guess what the public sees with their plain eye, that's no problem. But when you're using a device like even binoculars, that seemed to be problematic. With regard to the expectation of privacy, an individual's reasonable expectation of privacy.
So a helicopter is less sophisticated than a binoculars?
Viewing an individual's property, I guess, as applies to reasonable expectation of privacy, one could not reasonably expect that a person flying over would not be able to see their property and what's going on with their bare eye. But what the courts seem to find as invasive is the use of binoculars or any other technical device to enhance the viewing.
Could I ask you, while you're on the idea of enhancement of devices, about this word sophisticated? Because as I know you're aware, the intermediate court found significant what the circuit court had said about sophisticated electronic surveillance, where the circuit court judge said, this is 2013, technology has changed, the world has changed, and that what might have been considered, there needs to be a definition of what sophisticated electronic surveillance might be, as the definition may have changed as the world has changed. When you talk about sophisticated electronic surveillance, and in reference to what the judge was talking about, Mr. Tsushima, are we just getting back to the point I think you were arguing about whether the technology allows the viewing of something that's not able to be viewed with the natural view or the naked eye? Yes. So no matter how sophisticated the device might be, say it's a microscopic drone that can fly and be invisible, nonetheless, if it positions itself in a location that could be said to be, in our case law certainly looks at this, could said to be a location where the naked eye would be able to see the same thing, then you might argue that regardless of how sophisticated it is, there's not an expectation of privacy because a person in that location would be able to see the, in this case, the marijuana in somebody's backyard, right?
Right.
So I don't understand why it makes a difference unless I see sophisticated as meaning something other than whether a person can see with the, you know, an unaided view.
I guess the distinction I'm making is that you're using the device now to make your visual observation. I don't know how we would be able to testify or explain that something that's being seen from the drone's point of view would have necessarily been seen from the officer's point of view.
You just need an expert. Just an expert that would say that. That's why they designed the drone that way, and that's why they put it where it was. But that gets us, I guess, to the further point that's being discussed, I know you're getting to, about is that enough? Should we also consider other issues that have to do, for example, with whether or not it's a rural area or an urban area?
Yes, and with regard to that.
In terms of expectation of privacy.
And I think Satchler and Lake did talk about that, about they did note the areas being rural or urban, but I think the ICA did not consider is that it's not relevant unless you talk about the relevant characteristics of what is rural and what is urban, and in particular, whether it's isolated or remote property, because in those cases, they were talking about these rural areas, which were isolated country areas. There's no other residences nearby. It was essentially a farming area. And in that respect, it is relevant. In our case, what we had was a residential area. And from even the affidavit and the photo that's taken, you can see there are two other residences nearby. And in fact, even in defense counsel's declaration, it states that it was a highly populated rural area surrounded by many other homes.
But if this is I'm sorry, go ahead, Justice McKinney.
If it's a highly populated area with walls so that people can't see into your garden, into your yard, and I guess the circuit court said that there's no reasonable expectation of privacy in your yard from an aerial view. So in other words, if you have high walls, there's no reasonable expectation of privacy. In other words, people can come over with drones, with cameras, and let's say that this is a celebrity's house and the celebrity is just, you know, lounging by the pool area, perhaps even topless, a woman, and it's just fine. No reasonable expectation of privacy. They can just go ahead and photograph whatever they want to from the sky.
And I didn't get that from the circuit court's ruling. What I did get was, because there was no showing of the subjective expectation of privacy from aerial observation. In other words, what the court was pointing at is it didn't contain a green, it wasn't a greenhouse, a shed, or indoors. It wasn't under the eaves of the roof,
well,
covered under a tarp.
But he's got walls around, I mean, he's got walls, so it can't be seen from the street. Doesn't that show us?
I'd agree that's a subjective
expectation
of privacy from the ground view. Absolutely.
So in other words, what you're requiring is that somebody has to, like, put a tarp over their backyard, or if they're sunbathing, as Justice McKenna indicated. I mean, you have to have something, you have to enclose your backyard in, like, a tarp or a kind of a cocoon or something.
Otherwise, I would believe it would be an unreasonable expectation of privacy from the public from above. Yes.
So society is not ready to recognize. I mean, in other words, under your argument, it would seem is that all of us expect helicopters to hover over our house at 500 feet three times, and that's not a problem for any of us, just because we happen to know that occasionally something may fly over.
No, and I think that's where Stashter and Knight were wise enough to address this, where it becomes harassing or prolonged.
A helicopter over your house at 420 feet is not harassing?
No, I don't believe that is.
A helicopter hovering over your house?
And that's what I was trying to address with what Justice Paul was bringing up. At the point where it's hovering, what I think Stature and Knight was addressing is if it's hovering in a harassing or prolonged manner.
Wait, let's just leave the word hovering, because a helicopter going, I mean, airplanes and helicopters are built, my understanding, is to take it from one place to another. For to use a helicopter to hover, to stay in one place, you're making a deliberate decision. So there was a deliberate decision. They went back three times in order to try to identify what it is that their tip told them. And that, to you, is something that all of us would expect to happen?
That it can happen.
That we don't have...
That it would happen.
So this is, I understand, based on the record here, I saw another case that was referenced in the motion to suppress, that I think it was another case with Judge Kim or something like that, and it appeared to have been in the Waipahu area also. Mm-hmm. So what would prevent HPD from just routinely just hovering over these houses and looking down to see if there's any illegal activity going on in any of the houses,
I think, again, once again, the area of routinely hovering over, that falls under harassment. I think that would be a harassing type of behavior by the police.
It's the state's position here that this owner had no, well, the people in this house had no reasonable expectation of privacy, correct?
From the aerial surveillance from above, from 420 feet at a reasonable height.
Can I ask you about that? Because you're saying there's no reasonable expectation of privacy. And one of the distinctions that you were making is that this was an observation without binoculars. And I guess what I'm having a little difficulty with is that if the police had gone next door, okay, here, they'd gone next door, and they had climbed the fence and looked over, that would not have been good. Because under our case law, we have two cases, Kender and Boyton. And in both those cases, what happened is the police officers next door climbed up on a fence. And in our Supreme Court, of course, said, hey, you can't do that. But you're saying you can do the same thing from a helicopter. In other words, right, you have more protection from somebody, and both of them, and both situations that I'm talking to you about, there's no binoculars or anything else.
Right.
I'm talking about an observation made from either climbing a ladder or climbing a fence. That's not good under our law, but a helicopter is.
Well, Kender did discuss three things. It says the court must consider, one, the nature of the place involved. Two,
I'm sorry, did you hear the nature of the place involved?
The nature of the place involved, sorry. Number two, the precautions taken by the defendant to ensure his privacy. And number three, the position of the government officer. So that was one of the factors that Kender discussed is the position of the officer.
Correct. So
two should not be overlooked, and that's the precautions taken by the defendant to ensure his privacy. In this case, the precautions taken by the defendant to ensure privacy from above was none. None at all.
So therefore, and you're saying it's none because it's in the yard. So let's get back to my hypothetical. If someone chooses to sunbathe topless in their yard with a wall, there's no reasonable expectation of privacy.
There's no reasonable expectation of privacy from helicopters or other planes or whatnot flying above. But
and drones, you mean, predictably.
And maybe I should draw a distinction between what we would desire and it's unreasonable to believe that someone from the public could not view you from above. I think when a person does sunbathe in the nude on their balcony, they realize
balcony. Let's talk about a walled enclosure where you cannot be seen from the neighbors. So you're saying that anybody who goes outside of their house on the patio and is sunbathing or whatever they're doing, sleeping, reading a book, somebody's whatever it is, they have no expectation of privacy from aerial vantage points.
Correct. And as recent as September of the...
And aerial photography. So let's just forget the topless. Let's just say you're out there in a swimsuit. You're a celebrity, and there's no reason... Helicopters can come hover around your house, take photos of you sunbathing, and sell, you know, the paparazzi can sell all those photos. No problem. No expectation of no privacy, no invasion of privacy.
No, I think that that's a different realm that we're entering there, and I think that would fall under the harassing type of behavior. But
But what is harassment and what isn't? Is it what you're viewing? In other words, if you're viewing someone topless, it's harassment, but if you're viewing somebody, so is it going to be the nature of the observation that's going to be determined whether it's harassment or not?
Sorry, no, I believe it would be the nature of the police action that would make it harassment.
So in Justice McKenna's example, is it harassment for the police to fly at 500 feet and go house to house to house and hover and check, they're looking for marijuana, and whatever else they see, they see. Is that okay?
I guess I would want to know duration, height. These things all should be factored
same facts.
So what height is the, if it's at a reasonable height, as the cases had expressed, and not a dangerous height or not violating any of the aviation laws, and if it's not prolonged in nature, no one can see it.
How about if it's a drone that videotapes what it sees beneath it? Does that make any difference?
I do think it does make a difference, but I think Justice Wilson had addressed what was otherwise my concern, and that's drawing a distinction of whether the visual observation is made by an electronic device as opposed to the naked eye. At that point, I think, as Justice Wilson had pointed out, that we would have to call an expert to show that what's being taken by a drone would be the same visual observation as me.
What if it was? What if the manual for the drone said this is, you know, it has different settings and it could be naked eye or up to 10 times naked eye, and the operator says, I read the manual, and consistent with the manual, I set it for naked eye.
And then we fall under the same standard. It'd still be whether it's something that we'd reasonably expect, whether we would have a reasonable expectation of privacy from. And I think society does have a reasonable expectation of privacy from drones that are flying low to their house.
For drones, if it's low, in other words, the height would matter.
The height would be a problem.
Well, drones can fly much higher than helicopters and can take pictures from a much greater distance, from thousands of feet, and actually identify people's faces. That's how sophisticated. And the military has stuff like that, and it's going to be very, very soon that they probably can buy it. So I'm not so sure that that distinction. Go ahead.
Mr. Tsushima, I'm concerned about the difference between a reasonable expectation of privacy from a street level, mm-hmm. and then it gets less and less as something goes, the view becomes higher. And I actually am asking this. If you put up high enough fences and bushes where you are, it's clear that you don't want people to see in, mm-hmm. how does it differentiate when you just going up a little bit higher that you think that you can, you don't, you have a lessened expectation of privacy if something's higher? I don't see the distinction.
And I am drawing the distinction between what you are creating an expectation of privacy from. So even if you build the wall 50 feet high, you're still not giving yourself privacy from aerial observation from above. So I'm not trying to say that's lesser of an expectation of privacy from above, but that putting a tarp, putting some kind of cover over, that would be showing a subjective expectation of privacy at that point.
Mr.
There's none of that shown in this case.
In terms of the relative nature of expectation of privacy, in other words, do all areas have the same level of expectation of privacy that pertain to, as in this case, a residence? And in California, right, in the Cook case, the Supreme Court decided in California, when they were doing the weighing of, and let me be specific about the balance I'm talking about, it says the prevalence of air travel does not excuse us from the delicate balancing of societal and privacy interests. So they're, you know, balancing society's interests, which you could maybe include law enforcement interests versus privacy interests. So in California, maybe you could make the point that that's a state where law enforcement really doesn't need to utilize this kind of drone at eye level. However, if you're talking about a house that's next to the White House in Washington, D.C., maybe the expectation of privacy would be a bit different. But we're talking about Hawaii. So is there something about our community or something about this particular area that would suggest to you that the people there have less of an expectation of privacy because of law enforcement needs? Because, as I understand, this is Wahiawa?
No.
Waipahu.
Waipahu, excuse me. Waipahu, is there anything about the nature of the people in Waipahu or the community that suggests that you need to have flyovers by helicopters?
No, certainly not. And looking at the People v. Cook case, I do acknowledge that in that case, the California court had recognized that there's an increased expectation of privacy in the home and the curtilage. And I think that's what that case dealt with. But it also did note that that area within the curtilage does not itself bar all police observation, citing to Serrano, the U.S. Supreme Court case. And as recently as September of this past year, this court has stated in State v. Lincoln Phillips that the Fourth Amendment protects people, not places. What a person may person knowingly exposes to the public, even in his own home or office, is not subject of the Fourth Amendment protection. And this was discussed in the context of the Fourth Amendment and the Hawaii Constitution.
That is in the context of a case in which the defendant invited the police into his garage.
Yeah, no,
right?
That was my case.
So I don't think there's any issue of invitation here.
Right, but what I'm... What
I think there was a bit of a dissent by Judge Lim in that case, if I recall.
This is Phillips he's talking about.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm just saying for the proposition that when a person knowingly exposes the public, even in his home, that it's not necessarily subject to, or it's not subject to the Fourth Amendment. And I do know that case. That was, Phillips was my case, so I do know the facts of the case. I realize the light has come on.
Can I just ask one question? Would the analysis be at all different if this was a national, involved a allegation of national, of a threat to national security or public safety, a suggestion that there might be someone preparing to launch missiles at aircraft as they landed at Honolulu International Airport, and that's what the police were out looking for? Would that matter at all, or should it matter at all?
I'm not aware that there is
any distinction for
a distinction. I'm not aware. Is all I'll say. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, one last question before you sit down. I'm sorry, but you read a particular, but the very next sentence of that quote that you read from Phillips and from Katz, it says, "But what he seeks to preserve as private, even in an area accessible to the public, may be constitutionally protected." That's the next sentence. And I think there's a difference
Which page are you reading? I was reading from page 27.
I'm talking about Katz. I'm talking about the sentence
Sorry.
In Katz from what you knowingly expose. And it's in Kahaina, too. And I guess we can return to that thought, but that's the very next sentence.
Actually, well, I wasn't citing from Katz. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you. Ms. Arnett.
Chief Justice Rajamouli, Associate Justices of the Court.
Good morning.
My name is Susan Arnett, Deputy Public Defender, on behalf of the respondent, defendant, appellant, Benjamin Goudet. And that is the first time in 30 plus years of appearing before this court that I've uttered the words that I'm here on behalf of the respondent. So excuse me if I'm a bit discombobulated about that fact, or disappointed in the fact the respondent doesn't get rebuttal. It is our contention that on the four corners of the affidavit that supported the search warrant in this case, the search warrant is defective, and the evidence should have been suppressed. It's defective in a number of ways. One is it contains false information. Two is it omits relevant information. The false information was twofold, but both involved the helicopter surveillance. The officer asserted in the affidavit that he went up three times and conducted aerial surveillance. He claims that from the very first observation, he was able to delineate two rows. He was able, with his training, to distinguish that these were marijuana plants based on their color and structure. He counted approximately 20 to 25 plants, and he said that they were all in black pots. We asked you to look specifically at the photograph that was in evidence, and I have a blown-up one just so you can see it from here. But when you look at this photograph, first of all, this photograph was taken with a Canon zoom lens. That is in the discovery that is in the record on appeal. So this is not a view with the naked eye. This is not a view with the naked eye from 420 feet. And if you look at the plants where the arrow points to, and you see almost what appears to be a hedge, and across from it another hedge. You cannot make out a different color of those plants from surrounding plants above it in that same yard, in the yard adjacent, or in the house that is next to it. You cannot count plants. You do not see black pots for all of the plants, and you certainly cannot see the structure of these plants. And this is with the aid of a zoom camera. So Officer Hanawahine's assertion that with the naked eye from 420 feet, he could delineate all of what he claimed in his affidavit is simply unbelievable.
But Ms. Arnett, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Isn't it your position that even if credibility were determined from the point of view of the trial court, or the credibility was determined from the point of view of the police officer, that in this case, the warrant would still be defective, even if the statements of the officer were taken as true?
Well, we're not essentially going to concede that, oh, if you take everything else away, this one thing will prevail, because everything is here.
Assuming that he did see what he said he saw, that still leaves the issue about whether there was a violation of the expectation of privacy, right?
It does, but we're talking, right, there's two examinations for this court. One is whether we prevail on the warrant itself, and two is whether instead we should have had an evidentiary hearing. Our position is that we prevail on the warrant itself because the warrant has to be examined using the criteria of whether there were any false representations in it, which there were. Another representation was this idea of going up three times. Why would you possibly need to go up three times in a helicopter when, as the government says, the resources are limited and it's costly if you saw everything you claim to have seen and needed to see on your first observation?
When was this photo taken?
The photo, as far as I know, it was taken during one of the helicopter observations. The discovery sheet that's in the record on appeal refers to the camera that was used to take the photo. It does not give a specific date.
Were all three photos, all three helicopter observations taken before they executed a warrant on the premises?
Yes.
Well, why is there a police car in this photo?
I don't know if they went up as the search warrant was being taken, or they he did his first helicopter observation on October 22nd. Also on October 22nd, he went to that neighborhood to see if he could see anything from the ground. I don't know if that was the police car. There was a police car there related to that at that time. But the point being that not only did he not see with the naked eye, I ask you to imagine that you're at the south end zone of Aloha Stadium. We're talking about 1 1/3 distance past the north end zone, that he claims to be able to delineate what he saw. The second problem was the omission. Now, the state makes a big deal out of the fact in their written submissions that he had no obligation to tell the court that he personally had been found not credible by a sitting circuit court judge when he claimed to have viewed with the naked eye from a 500-foot distance, essentially exactly what he described here, that he had viewed from 420 feet. And our contention is that when he's going to include in the affidavit information about his more than 100 search warrant investigations involving narcotics and drugs that resulted in more than 200 people being arrested, participated in more than 100 investigations, et cetera, then he also has an obligation to say, and I have been found not to be credible when I make the claims I'm making here. And he did not include that information.
So what do you want? You want an evidentiary hearing. So is that what you
said? We want the ICA decision affirmed and the evidence suppressed. We do not believe in this case that an evidentiary hearing is required. And we say that for two reasons. One is because we believe the state has to live with what they created. What they created was the search warrant based on the affidavit that the officer submitted. In the affidavit, he makes the assertions. He mentions no high-powered use of technology. And if we're going to be held to those four corners, which is what the state advocated, then using a de novo review of the picture, what he asserts in the affidavit, what we know, it does not pass the standards that Stackler had. And we want to note here, too, the issue of the distance that the helicopter was from the ground. The state asserts that they were in compliance with federal regs because they noted their answering brief that the helicopter, if it complies with any routes or altitudes specifically prescribed by four helicopters by the FFA. Well, there's no evidence that they did so. And this is where the state essentially...
Say that whole phrase again. The state
asserted in their answering brief at page 17 that
they complied with
any route or altitude specifically prescribed for helicopters by the FFA. The state says, here's our affidavit. You are not entitled to an evidentiary hearing unless you can point to specific articulable errors, omissions, etc. And here's the problem. On that affidavit, we don't know what enhancement he used. But he clearly used some enhancement to see what he claims to have seen, because he couldn't have seen it with the naked eye. That photograph proves he couldn't have seen it with the naked eye. There is no way in that photograph you see the structure of those plants.
So is it the defense's position that as long as it could have been seen by the naked eye, this is fine?
No.
All right.
No.
I have a question regarding the ICA. You're asking us to affirm the ICA, which discusses that, and the state raises this on cert, three targeted flights. So the ICA says that targeted aerial surveillance of a property is at odds with Hawaii's protections of individual privacy. So under this, does this mean that as long as it's not targeted, the police could send drones over all of the properties just to conduct routine searches of
no,
entire neighborhoods?
I don't know. Absolutely. I don't think it means that at all. Anderson says what you do is a case-by-case examination. And there could be cases where certain behavior would be permissible that would not be permissible in other cases. For example, going back to Chief Justice Reichenwald's question, if you were looking for one of the alleged Boston Marathon bombers and he was running through the backyards of neighborhoods in Boston and you were using helicopters in the air with night vision binoculars to try to find him, arguably those would be exigent circumstances that would allow for that kind of search to be lawful.
In other words, you have the same exceptions that you would have in other situations. So exigent circumstances would cover terrorists or all these other situations where police have a right when there's a to bypass the warrant requirement.
Absolutely. One of the points, I think it was the Kendall case that said that the issue is not whether a fence is there or not. It's the reasonable expectation of privacy. And to suggest that Hawaii residents, under our Constitution, which has a greater protection of privacy twofold than I believe anywhere else in the country, one based on the broader protections of Article 1, Section 7, and two based on the right to privacy, which is specifically identified in Article 1, Section 6, to suggest that they are simply at the whim of whoever flies over them to take pictures, that you literally could not have an expectation of privacy. And the answer that they give to that is, well, they could cover it. They could, you know, cover it with black cloth or cover it with whatever. We don't know what technology is out there that could see through that black cloth.
Well, Ms. Arnett, assuming that, and with our case law, we don't like enhancements. We don't like general, I mean.
It's problematic, yes.
It's problematic to have enhancements. But we have, and other states have said, if you've taken measures to try to cover up unlawful behavior, then that's how you illustrate that you want the activities to be private. So saying that we could use other, the police officers could use methods to see through, that won't necessarily get you where you want to go in our court.
Well, our contention, no, it's not, we're not saying they could do it and it would be right or lawful. We're saying that's the problem, that to say to a defendant, you have to articulate what's wrong with this affidavit, what you find in it that's, and we're saying that by their choice to put in their bare bones, I observed, without acknowledging the use of enhancement, when clearly enhancement was used, when they omit important information, all of those things, the defendant is at a disadvantage because the defendant doesn't know what was used and doesn't know what was available to be used. In the same way that in order to do a wiretap, you have to get a warrant ahead of time, then perhaps if they're going to use enhancements, they need to have some check or balance on their use of the enhancements, or they have to be required to put that in an affidavit.
Is that helicopter enhancement?
It certainly is.
Okay.
And so is whatever they use while they're in the helicopter.
And in that light, it seems that what you're doing with a helicopter is very similar to what was done in those prior Hawaii cases of using a ladder or some other instrument to give you a vantage point. The helicopter is serving the same purpose. And what Hawaii law, it's not only, it would appear to me, what is being used beyond your visual, but it's the ability to use scientific or whatever it is in order to gain a vantage point.
We think that that is true. We also think that there is a distinction and should be a distinction, or it is reasonable for a court to note a distinction between residential property, what kind of residential property, and urban property, and remote, country.
How problematic is it that it was targeted? Because I know that's something Mr. Tsushima mentioned. And, you know, arguably, although our two prior cases talk about the fact that it was a general flyover, do you see a requirement, and the ICA really did emphasize the fact that this was a targeted surveillance. How does that cut in the analysis from your perspective?
It essentially makes it worse. For one thing, in Stackler, one of the things that they noted was that the property location, and I believe it was in the North Kona area, Captain Cook, and it was remote, but they said there were frequent vehicles flying over in the sky, tour aircraft, whatever. In this neighborhood in Waipahu, and you can look at one of the attachments to the affidavit, shows the grid of houses. They're very close. The photograph shows they're practically on top of each other. This is a dense residential area, as distinguished perhaps from certain neighborhoods like Kahala, or ones where they may have, you know, more square footage per lot. But so that the denseness of this, the fact that there would not have been frequent flights of any kind over such a densely populated area, speaks to the degree of expectation of privacy that one would have in their yard from not being seen from above, when you've taken all the precautions to shield yourself from ground observation.
Could the police have done one flyover without any kind of enhancement, in your view? If they had just gone out one trip, 420 feet, went over, saw what they saw, and that was it? Is that acceptable or not?
It's difficult for me to answer the question because we simply do not believe they could have seen what they saw at 420 feet. So the question is, if they'd flown over at 100 feet or some distance that would have allowed the naked eye to see what they saw. I think you'd have to look at the other factors, but on what we know here, I think that would still be problematic because the anonymous tip was so essentially worthless. It was.
Well, what if it had not been an anonymous tip? Then a search warrant not have been required?
I mean, I think it would again depend on the circumstances, but if the tip had been from a known informant who had given them reliable information before and was able to tell them with detail why they believed.
That would have made this okay without a search warrant.
Well, it might have made it harder for the defense to mount a successful suppression. I can't really say that without knowing more about the nature.
Because you have a less of an expectation of privacy if the informant is a reliable informant.
Well,
I'm a little bit confused.
It kind of comes back to, was the informant someone that had been invited into the home? You know, did the nature of the informant's observation reflect?
I understand the reliability,
the expectation of privacy.
I see. Okay, so if it was a reliable informant and the reliable informant had seen it, the police could do this search without a warrant?
No, we're not saying that. We're saying that you'd have to look at the circumstances under which the informant came by the information.
Your focus on circumstances is something that it leaves, I think, some question about the position that you're taking as to expectation of privacy, because you seem to be addressing change in circumstances depending on whether it's urban or not, change in circumstances depending on how dense the community is, change in circumstances depending on how often a flight takes place over the residence. So am I to take it that your position is that you don't have an expectation of privacy in the airspace above your house unless, and then you have to analyze these other factors? Because another analysis that is suggested to some extent by the California court is that regardless of where you live, you have an expectation of privacy that protects you from a view taken by a helicopter, a drone, whatever technological device it is, a view taken above your house by the government.
I've been more inarticulate than usual, apparently, because no, that is not what I'm saying. I'm not saying it depends on the circumstance. You do have an expectation of privacy in your own home, your backyard, from observation by the sky. The circumstances I'm talking about are the circumstances that are delineated in Stackler, where the court says that you consider whether the vehicle doing the observation was following FAA regulations. Was it a targeted and prolonged
in Stackler,
aerial surveillance?
In Stackler, there's no reasonable expectation of privacy. We're talking about situations in this case where there's obviously a reasonable expectation of privacy if you accept the proposition that one doesn't expect helicopters to fly at 300 or 500 or whatever the distance.
And our point is that we prevail either way. We prevail because of the expectation of privacy that you have in your own home from aerial observation. We prevail because even if you want to apply other measures, such as some of the ones that are delineated in Stackler, such as whether it's a prolonged harassment, and we submit that three times over 2 days is prolonged and repetitive harassment. The use of highly sophisticated viewing devices, which we believe did occur here. The picture with a zoom lens does not show what the officer claimed to have seen with the naked eye.
Ms. Arnett, do you have a problem in that, as you had mentioned, that you're very rarely, if ever, a respondent, there's, on the application for cert, you folks didn't file an app for cert, and the state didn't ask that the court review the affidavits, or there was no mention of the reviewing of the, whether or not the affidavits would be sufficient to revisit the suppression.
We think that because it's
and the ICA also didn't address it. So.
Because it's a de novo review, we believe that the court can address that, and it was the state in their argument about, you know, they're arguing that the ICA erred in setting aside the findings of fact and conclusions of law entered by the trial court, and by interpreting Article 1, Section 7 right. in the way that they did.
But the ICA never addressed the credibility of the affidavit.
Actually, the ICA does, and we take issue with it. The ICA at page 11, or page 10 to 11 in their opinion, says, there's no evidence that Officer Hanawahini did not comply with state or federal flight regulations, nor is it there evidence that he used the aid of a sophisticated viewing device to view the plants. We think that's incorrect. We think there is evidence that the flight regulations were not complied with because the regulations normally would have been 1,000 feet and he was at 420 feet and there was nothing in the affidavit that said, that gave him the out that the government cites in their answering brief that he was complying with any route or altitude specifically prescribed by helicopters, for helicopters by the FAA.
So should we remand for a hearing on those issues? And what do you think of Judge Fujise's suggestion that there should be a remand for issues related to the efforts of the defendant to maintain privacy or take precautions?
Well, perhaps not surprisingly, we don't think the state should have their cake and eat it too. The state chose to go on the four corners of the affidavit, and we believe the decision should be made on the four corners of the affidavit, and on the four corners of the affidavit, it fails. It fails for the reasons that we've stated. We do believe that the court could give guidance that in future cases that there should probably be.
We're supposed to take judicial notice that you can't see these things at 420 feet?
We don't think you have to take judicial notice. It's a de novo review, and if you look at the photograph, you can't see what he claims to have seen in the photo taken by the Zoom camera. If you can't see them with the Zoom camera, how did he see them at a greater distance with the naked eye? He refers to having been able to see the color and structure of the plants. That's how he identified them as marijuana. He claims he did it three times, each time at a distance of 420 feet or higher. So we believe that this court can conclude that that was not possible, just as Judge Kim decided that.
Did he say a distance of 420 feet or a height of 420 feet? Because I think there was also evidence that he said that he didn't, they avoided going right above the house because that would be a little bit too noticeable, so they looked at it from an angle.
He said, I was flying in a helicopter at more than 420 feet above ground.
So the distance is actually greater than 420 feet because if you're not directly above the house.
That's right. That's right. So we believe the court can conclude that he could not have seen what he says he saw, and therefore there is false representations in the affidavit. We believe it's appropriate, given the fact that he specifically chose to highlight his training, his experience, the number of cases he's been involved on, to suggest that he's been in this area and what everything he's doing is essentially good and positive, and not to inform the court that, in fact, his own credibility in this area, his identification from a height of marijuana plants, was found to be lacking in a previous case, we think is an omission that also makes the affidavit defective. So we think on the four corners of the affidavit, in this case, there is a basis.
How could we consider this other situation if it's not within the four corners of the affidavit? How do we know that he was found to be not credible by another judge if it's not in the affidavit?
Because the only way that you could attack an affidavit for having an omission is to say, this is the information that's not in there. And the trial attorney did attach to her memos the transcript of the proceedings of State v. Guerrero before Judge Kim, where Judge Kim made the finding, I just don't believe that you could see that with the naked eye from that distance.
And Ms. Arnett, your point is that you shouldn't give the prosecutor two bites of the apple once they fail on the affidavit. Why should they get another chance to revive them?
In this case, yes. But we also believe that it would be appropriate for the court to shift the burden. To, instead of sticking with the language that currently exists that the defense is not entitled to a hearing unless the defense has to make a substantial preliminary showing that a false statement knowingly and intentionally or with reckless disregard for the truth was included by the affiant in the affidavit. And our concern is this, as the technology gets farther and farther afield, the ability of the mechanical means to go higher and higher in the sky, to use more and more sophisticated enhanced viewing equipment to possibly see through walls, see through black fiberglass cloth, see through opaque windows, that sort of thing, the defense is not going to have the knowledge to say that these are false representations. In this case, fortunately, we have a picture that illustrates why the claim in the affidavit is not believable.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm reaching for what this means in terms of shifting the burden. So the government would have a burden that it doesn't have now that has to do with a showing that it has to make in the affidavit in support of the search warrant? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes. That, for example, if the government uses any sort of enhanced means, then that has to be spelled out in the affidavit. For example, in the affidavit, the picture was attached.
Spelled out with respect to what issue?
Spelled out with, we used a 7x50 high-powered binoculars, or we took the picture with a Canon zoom lens, or, you know, whatever additional information.
But the reason that information is being supplied is so that the government can show that they've complied with a reasonable expectation of privacy? Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, no, we're suggesting that it needs to be supplied so that we can examine if the government overstepped a reasonable expectation of privacy. Because if you go with the government's claim in this case, with his naked eye, he claims he saw from 420 feet. Now, we still think it was not okay for the helicopter to be there in the first place based on that tip. But he didn't see that with his naked eye from 420 feet because you can't. And the picture proves that. And fortunately, the picture happened to be included as an exhibit to the affidavit. But if it hadn't, we would have no information in the affidavit, and more importantly, the reviewing court would have no information in the affidavit to show that enhancement was used. And then when we're there saying, well, we want a hearing, just as the trial attorney was in this case, the court is saying, well, I'm not just going to let you have free cross-examination. And she couldn't point to specific information more than she did, because the government has all the information, and there should be some requirement that the government has to share that information.
And in your reply brief, you cited to a Ninth Circuit case, I believe it's called Mejia, M-E-J-I-A, where you cited to this case saying that a hearing is required where moving papers in a suppression motion show contested issues as to lawfulness. Is that the test that you're asking us to apply, that you believe should be adopted as to whether or not hearings are required in suppression motions?
I mean, we cited it for that point, exactly. And we do believe that hearings should be accorded. And if the court thought the four corners of this affidavit somehow justified the issuance of the search warrant, then our argument would be that indeed in this case we'd be entitled to a hearing to challenge that. But we don't think that's true in this case. We think a hearing should be accorded, but in this case, the state chose to go forward on the four corners of the affidavit. The state falls on the affidavit, and we believe that the ruling of the Intermediate Court of Appeals should be affirmed. The findings of fact and conclusions of law of the trial judge should be set aside, and what was seized pursuant to the search warrant should be suppressed. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you. Mr. Tsushima, your rebuttal.
If I could at first correct a couple of misstatements by opposing counsel. Sorry, first, with regard to the Federal Aviation Administration standards, it states, quote, helicopters may be operated at less than the minimum of 500 feet if the operation is conducted without hazard to persons or property on the surface. So it does not require that it be above 1,000 feet, as counsel had stated.
So the helicopters can fly at any height then?
If it is conducted without hazard to persons or property on the surface.
Well, it says helicopter complies with routes and altitudes prescribed for helicopters by the FAA. I thought that was the rule.
That as well.
So how was this route and altitude prescribed for helicopters by the FAA? Is there any evidence in the record to show that the FAA authorized this route and altitude?
No, there was nothing put in the record. I would.
Does the state concede what Ms. Arnett was arguing here, that the photo attached was not a naked eye view?
No, that was another thing I was going to get to. This picture actually isn't helpful at all for this court for a number of reasons.
I'm sorry, first, I couldn't hear what you just said.
This picture isn't helpful at all for this court for a number of reasons. The first is we don't know the distance that this was taken out. Secondarily, it's a blurry picture. It's not a very good picture. As we all know, cameras can take better clear pictures. Sometimes they take blurry pictures. And from the height that this appears to be taken from, I don't even have good vision. Well, I know my vision is better than that. Just looking at the cars, you can see the cars are extremely blurry in this picture. For purposes of determining what one can view with the naked eye from 420 feet, this picture doesn't help at all.
I'm sorry, is this naked? Is this a 420 feet naked eye view? That was my question.
No, it's not. And that's what
I... Isn't it an enhanced view?
No, it's neither. Well...
Is it a zoomed view? Do you know?
I don't know.
You don't know?
No, it doesn't say.
Thank you.
It doesn't say.
Wasn't this attached to your affidavit?
It was attached as the officer's affidavit, correct. But it wasn't attached as a display or showing for the court to... otherwise show the height and angle that he made the observation. There's just no description for that. Counsel had pointed out that what the court should look at or consider is what one would view from standing on the ground at a lower stadium. I don't know if you guys golf. If you guys are golfers, it's easier to use your own personal experience to be able to determine what you can see. And it's not a 420 yards, it was 420 feet. So that would be about 140 yards on a golf course. If you ever stood on a golf course from 104 yards away to the tee, you absolutely can see what's on the tee, and what's on the green. You can make out the flag, you can make out the sand, you can make out everything very clearly. And if the court has ever experienced that, that's what I would recommend the court use as a basis for trying to determine whether this is possible. Not whether standing on a low stadium where, I don't know if you've ever stood on a low stadium, but I never have. And certainly I wasn't trying to make observations from across the field at any point.
Mr. Tsushima, what about Ms. Sarnia's argument that if Officer Hanawahini puts in so much evidence trying to enhance his credibility, isn't he also obligated to inform the court that he has been found less than credible?
No, and in particular, not with regard to the stated hearing that the defense was pointing out, and that's the hearing before Judge Glenn Kim. In that case, there's a clear distinguishable fact, and that's that in that case, the judge had made a determination that the observation was made from in excess of 550 to 600 feet. So just on that fact alone, I don't see how the officer would be expected to attach that as part of his affidavit in support of the search warrant. The other main thing that I wanted to get to that's important is that counsel had stated that we should rest with that we, the state, advocated on the four corners of the affidavit. We had never taken that position. In fact, I'll point out to the hearing on page 7, where the prosecutor pointed out that the state does have Officer Hanawahini available to take testimony with regards to the first two issues regarding the anonymous tip, as well as the circumstances surrounding the house, if the court wants to hear from him. So what the court, what the state had taken position was that the officer could not be called for the purposes of challenging the sufficiency of the affidavit, of the search warrant based on the affidavit. That's the only position that the state was taking where it was resting on the four corners, but not for the entire hearing. That was a conclusion that apparently the court had made on its own. And that's made clear from the transcripts of the hearing, as well as any of the submissions by the state that this court will review.
Wasn't it the court's point of view, though, that the court had enough evidence with the affidavit to make the decision to not suppress?
Did we take that position?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. No, we did not take that position. What we took the position is that the court could make the determination as to the one issue, and that was the challenging on the sufficiency of the sufficiency of the affidavit could not produce probable cause, only on the one issue. But as to the other two issues, the state had officer ready, and the officer was available to testify. The state did not take a position that was resting on the four corners of the affidavit for the entire hearing. That was something that apparently, again, it looks like the court had sua sponte made a decision. Sorry, I'm trying to look through my notes if I had any other points.
Well, do you think that decision was erroneous? I mean, given the record suggests, or at least the challenge was made, that the observation could not have been what it was. What's the court supposed to, what should the court have done in those circumstances? At least the argument was there.
I think it'd be helpful to have a hearing on the matter and have the officer testify to all the concerns and otherwise spots that is otherwise missing from the hearing. And that is matters such as frequency of flights in the area, describing the area, and those matters.
So he could testify, or the officer could testify to what altitude he was at, what it looked like
exactly.
That day, whether it was a clear day or cloudy day, those kinds of things.
And also of importance, the duration of the surveillance that was made, because that was one of the matters that the ICA seemed to leap to without having any factual basis to claim. They said that there was a prolonged surveillance of the residents. And actually, we know he did go up three times, but we don't know the duration of actually those moments. It might have been just a quick flyby.
Is it the state's position that there was no reasonable expectation of privacy here?
Correct.
And so, under these circumstances, no reasonable expectation of privacy. Okay, if there was a reasonable expectation of privacy, was this a search that required a warrant?
No.
This was not a search either?
This was not a search in
okay.
the Constitution.
Okay, so there's no reasonable expectation of privacy, and this was not a search.
Correct.
And so if police fly over routinely in helicopters at 420 feet, there's no reasonable expectation of privacy, and it's never a search.
That might be another fact pattern too, that's separate and apart from what we're dealing with here, and would have
So the police would be free to send drones all over
I don't know
at 420 feet. It's never a search.
No, I'm not saying it's never a search. And under the statute at night, it seems to be that if it's prolonged or harassing in nature, then that is problematic. And I am standing to that.
Okay. So if it's prolonged or harassing, it becomes a search.
It becomes something that the individual does have a reasonable expectation of privacy from.
I see. But with respect to a drone that's just routinely flying over, there's never a reasonable expectation of privacy.
No, there may be.
As long as it's not prolonged.
At the point where it's routinely, it may be. It may be harassing in nature.
Well, if it's just, you know, if they do it, the police do it once every 6 months or once a year or whatever is decided, then they could just, theoretically, they don't even need to have people involved. They can actually just use a camera, take a picture of everything, run the camera through an imaging device that recognizes, and bingo, just print it out.
And again, so, I feel like we're going in circles in that.
But let me just ask you one thing, to follow up Justice McKenna. So in order for the person to get an expectation of privacy, I want to make sure I understand, the person essentially has to somehow build something over their residence or backyard or whatever it is. In other words, so it's secret. It seems to me you're equating secret with privacy.
And yes, and this goes exactly to the quote that we left off at the front half that Kat says. but what he seeks to preserve as private, even in an area accessible to the public. So yes, he has to seek it to be private. Absolutely.
And for you, it's not enough to build walls around your house, regardless of their height.
Subject an expectation from ground surveillance? Yes, absolutely.
Anything further? Very well. Thank you to our attorneys today. The court will take this matter under advisement.